Hello, and welcome to a convention spotlight episode on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, I will be talking about a convention I recently attended. In this episode, I am joined by my sister Kay. We are going to have a discussion of Wizard World Austin, or Austin Comic Con, as it is known also.
I was tempted to say a spoiler-filled discussion.
I was thinking about that, too. It's like we're not going to spoil the convention, but we're going to recap it. A recapped-filled discussion. How about that? I think its official name may be Austin Comic Con, but I feel obligated to call it Wizard World Austin for a couple of reasons. One, I grew up in San Diego, and while I think San Diego Comic-Con, Comic-Con International San Diego, has done a horrible job protecting their trademark, their brand.
Yeah.
I think, and that while there are other shows that are Comic-Cons, I really think the Wizard Show is something different. Not better, not worse, but different.
Yeah.
It has a lot of things that make it look as if it is like other Comic-Cons or whatever. But there's a bigger focus on celebrities, on autographs, on
photo ops.
Photo ops, VIP tickets, better seating at the panels, and things of that sort.
Well, this year, and I think you have the layout for the exhibit hall handy and may be able to confirm it, but I had the feeling that there wasn't a distinct artist's alley so much as a half of the floor where Artist's Alley was commingled with kind of a, I almost want to say a creator's pavilion.
It was, well, I was going to say it's officially Artist's Alley, but yeah, it's labeled Artist's Alley, but I would say creator's pavilion is the better description because there were artists, but there were also authors and other people. I'm trying to think it would be even the right way to describe a few of them.
There were some that were like handmade plush isn't quite what I want to say, but
crafts.
Yeah.
I was thinking also there was the one guy who had some of the Hanna-Barbera stuff. He worked on the shows back in the day, but I don't know if he was an artist or not. And certainly, even if he was, it's a different kind of an artist than like a comic book artist or somebody doing pinup shots or other kind of, I almost want to say lithographs, but that's not the right word. But you know what I mean.
Well, and not to skip ahead as I so often do, but one of the celebrity guests made a comment during their panel that they're noticing more and more at these conventions that artists are doing art keyed to the celebrities at the panel. And she was saying that an artist had made a lithograph and was selling it and had given her one.
Who had mentioned that?
Lonnie.
Oh, interesting.
Well, and she was saying it was an imagining of a described scene.
Oh, got it. The turkey drop.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And she said she loved the art. She really appreciated it. But that to her, that was kind of an interesting evolution of what these artist alleys are.
Well, and that's part of why I think this is something different than what a lot of us might consider a more traditional Comic-Con, because there are comic books on the floor, but few and far between. There are enough things to make it seem similar-ish to a San Diego Comic-Con, a C2E2, or some of the other comic conventions, granted on a smaller scale, but there were a lot more things centered around, here are the photos of the celebrities, you could go get them to sign this, or
a lot of the shopping opportunities felt divided between toys of the moment, mm-hmm. the Funko Pop, stuff like that, and then the, I want to say, accents to cosplay.
Yeah, I would say,
whether it was the jewelry,
well, the jewelry, the
lightsabers and weapons,
steampunk sort of stuff.
Yeah,
the weaponry, be it archaic sword type stuff or fantasy wand sort of stuff or sci-fi lightsaber type stuff.
I'll admit there was one mystery box that I was tempted by. The price put it out of the budget. one of the lightsaber booths had a mystery saber box.
Well, I hadn't realized that. Interesting.
But it was either $75 or $100.
Yeah, forget that. At that price, I want to pick the...
Exactly.
And I don't need a lightsaber.
Exactly. And that's why I was like, you know, conceptually, I get why that's a great concept. And if you have someone who basically loves everything at that booth and can't pick...
Yeah.
And it's guaranteed to be in excess of the value of the mystery box... I can especially see where if someone, because we're doing this in November, mid-November, I can see where if we had gone with someone who is a huge Star Wars fan that we didn't have a Christmas present for, and they had said, I love every saber at this booth, then yeah. That mystery box would have been a great Christmas present.
Well, and again, some of the stuff, the lightsabers looked really cool. There were a couple of Captain America shields and a few things like that that were nice, but it didn't... San Diego, you're going to see, again, tons of comic dealers of new comics, vintage comics, really expensive comics, variant cover comics, original art, stuff like that. Here, there were some places that had some comics.
I felt there were two booths where I noticed comics.
There was one that had long boxes that seemed to be miscellaneous back issues, one or two that had a bunch of trades. To me, it's not a kind of convention to go to buy comics.
Yeah.
Like, if you set out for that, you're going to be disappointed.
Well, and going back to comparing, contrasting to San Diego, I think San Diego Comic-Con, whoever sets up that exhibit hall, does something that I consider very difficult, and they pull it off quite well, which is theming sections of the exhibit hall.
Well, and I think they've done a little of... They think they've done that here a little. Let's go back, though, to when we walked in... On Friday. This is a 3-day convention, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Friday is, frankly, like a preview night in terms of duration.
Yeah.
It functions very differently than preview night at San Diego.
Well, and you also have a lot of actors who can't make it for all 3 days. And many of the ones who can only make it for 2 days choose Saturday and Sunday, figuring that's when the most attendees can make right. it. So... You've got an exhibit hall that at least a quarter of it feels like it's dedicated to the celebrities. And maybe a third of those celebrities aren't present Friday.
There's almost a, not quite a central.
Yeah, central
the
corridor.
The layout is a central corridor, but it's not in the center because of the layout of this.
Yeah.
Let's get to the layout of the floor in just a sec, though. Okay. I want to roll though. So that first day, it's like a 4 to 9 kind of exhibit hall hours on a Friday. So it's not worth taking the day off.
Mm-hmm.
I got off a little early and made it down. And once we got parked, we got over there. They were in a different part of the convention center than they were last year. And I think they've been down in the side before. But it's one of those, it's like I was ready to head off to the left. Oh, we're going to the right. Okay, that's different. They were down... at the First Street versus the Fourth Street side of the convention center. Not that that matters to most of the listeners. Point is, though, different part of the hall than they had before.
Mm-hmm.
They had a kind of a security zone with a metal detector and such. Okay, given what happened in Phoenix,
I believe.
Makes sense.
And they had bag search at the metal detector.
Yeah, so I appreciate them trying to take that seriously. Once we got past that, it's like, well, where do we go for our press badges? And that was just kind of around a corner to where we couldn't see it. So it was a little confusing at that point. And then once we got that, it's like, okay, let's go into the hall. And the hall, at that point, it's a square room with another square room kind of behind it, but offset a little bit.
Yeah.
But in that first place you enter, smack dab as you go in, is a stage.
We're in the live music capital of what, the world, the country?
Of the world, so Austin claims. Whether yes. that's true or not, I honestly don't know.
But one of the things I've noticed that seems to come with that claim to fame is things like having a live music stage the moment you enter here. There are at least 2 live music stages I can think of at our airport behind security, between security and the gates. We have live music in unexpected places, is what it comes down to.
And I'm okay with that, but the minute you walk into the hall having something that is a stage of any sort to stop traffic...
I was going to say, it became a traffic barrier multiple times.
Yeah.
And to the point that today, was it?
Yeah.
maybe yesterday when we went in, they now had ropes forcing you to the right, and you couldn't go straight to the stage.
That was yesterday.
That was yesterday.
But in this area, this first kind of thing, they had, if when you had entered, you're in kind of the along one wall is kind of immediately along to your left. If you went forward there, you'd have a lot of toys and some other type of vendors and stuff. You've got the stage behind it. You've got a VIP area and then some other stuff off to the right. But then if you would go almost like through the stage, you would have wound up at the first edge of the autograph celebrity areas. And this corridor extended through not only this hall, but the other room behind it. And it's kind of on one side you have some celebrities and the other you've got another. So you've got to kind of walk all the way around it. I'm doing a horrible job explaining this. But that was one of those that as you're going down one side, you're seeing like Lauren Lester, who played Robin on the Batman animated series, Kevin Conroy, who played Batman, Dean Cain, who played Superman, Kim Conroy, Batman on the Batman animated adventures, or yeah, the Bruce Timm series, along with Lauren Lester. But Dean Cain, who played Superman on Lois and Clark. Then you had Howard Hessman and Lonnie Anderson from WKRP. Then you have this huge photo ops area that went 100, 150 feet or some such to handle the lines during the busy time. We avoided this at the busy time, so I never saw it full.
Yeah.
But then on the flip side of this area was where you had a lot of the other celebrities, the Holly Marie Combs, the
Charisma Carpenter.
Charisma Carpenter, Emma Caulfield,
Jewel State, Summer Glau, Sean Marr,
and Joe Flanagan.
Yeah.
If you go back though to where we had entered, you come in, boom, smack in front of you is the stage. There's walls kind of along your right to one degree, one area, and the left forming a 90-degree angle. Again, I said if you went to the left, you'd have the toys. If you went to the right though, you'd have some other stuff. You have a pizza vendor, whatever. But then you get to the end of that room and you've got the standing area. Boom. That's where you had Jason Momoa.
Yeah. And that standing area was blocking, from my perspective, blocking. Because those people didn't realize those doors that they were lined up very close to, those were the only doors you could use to exit the exhibit hall within the secured perimeter.
Yeah. That took us a while to figure out how do we get out of the exhibit hall without having to go back through the metal detectors.
Yeah.
But then if you followed from Jason Momoa off to kind of facing him with the stage behind you to the left, that's where you get kind of some other booths and stuff. And if you continue along that main celebrity corridor, off to your right would be the artist alley and then some more booths, some of those booths being, again, artists, Shields. There was one place that had a snow speeder and was it a land speeder or whatever from Star Wars? I thought they were going to have a General Lee, but I never did see that. But it was one of those, you've got a lot of 10x10 booths, and while they're in a grid fashion, it was kind of weird because it never felt like there was a clear corridor or aisleway to zigzag across. It was one that it made it surprisingly challenging to find a good path through versus I look at the diagram here and it looks like it should be fairly straightforward. It just didn't feel that way because these were only 10 feet wide aisles, 10 foot wide booths. So,
well, part of it is there were two chunks of celebrity autograph areas with an aisle splitting down the middle of that. Mm-hmm. And then it felt like the celebrity autograph islands, their one aisle, it merged up with aisles for the booths, but then the big island of celebrity autograph area seemed to be a forced dead end, if you will, to the aisles to the booths on either side of it.
Yeah. There were things about the floor plan that on paper I think worked okay, but in practice didn't work well.
Because all the celebrities you mentioned were on the photo op part of the island for the most part. Because like you didn't mention Michael Cudlitz and some of the other ones that were on the nearer half of the island when we first walked in.
There was a clear segmentation. Mm-hmm. And then again, Momoa being off on his own. Again, Justice League movies out, etc.
I was going to say, I think he was one of two off on his own.
Who was the other? The WWE guys.
There you go.
The Hardy Boys.
Yeah.
Which I think Hardy Boys, I think totally different I think, you know, Frank and Joe.
Yeah.
We walked through the hall Friday in maybe, I'm going to say, an hour-ish. And there were one or two things that were mildly interesting, but nothing where I really felt, gosh, I'm at risk of spending money. Mm-hmm. But to me, that's not the sort of show this is. It's not likely that I'm going to find a comic I'm going to need or want. The odds of me finding a toy I'm going to need or want are fairly low.
Mm. Well, this is the kind of show that had three actors from Firefly, but the Austin Browncoats did not set up a booth at.
It's one that the four main comic stores I can think of here in town, none of them had a booth here.
Yeah.
And that's not to say this is a bad convention.
No.
It's to say it is not a comic book centric convention.
Yeah.
Again, they had a ton of celebrities. Jason Momoa, again, the three from Stargate were Summer Glau, Jewel State, and Sean Maher. Jewel was also on Stargate Atlantis with Jason Momoa and Joe Flanagan, so three stars for that. Mm-hmm. They had Holly Marie Combs representing the Charm stuff. They had Charisma Carpenter and Emma Caulfield representing Buffy and Angel. And that's, again, not counting the two from WKRP in Cincinnati of Lonnie Anderson and Howard Hessman, or Dean Cain for Lois and Clark.
Michael Cudlitz is The Walking Dead.
Yeah. Two of the leads, again, from the Batman animated stuff. And again, there's plenty of others we're not even thinking of.
Yeah.
It's a very celebrity-heavy convention.
Yeah. And honestly, to me, it feels more like an autograph show in that respect.
I agree with that. And there's a heavy commerce side of it, because when you went up to go talk to one or two people, even though there was nobody there, there was the volunteer or whatever at the head, kind of a go here to pay this person money before you go talk to that person sort of. And again, it's set up to be an efficient process when they've got a lot of people buying autographs, buying photos or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I get it, but that's certainly not what I'm here for.
Yeah.
But there's an audience for that. The show seems to do well with it.
Yeah. Well, and I totally get that. But, well, like when I went up to Lonnie Anderson, there was no one in line. Mm-hmm. And I just went up and asked if she had a moment to talk. And she said, yes, I'd be delighted. And she and I talked for quite a few minutes and had a wonderful conversation. And it was one of those, I was really glad I took the time. And I think we both enjoyed it.
But think about how that's different from how this show was, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago when...
Richard Deanless Anderson. Yes, you're right. Sorry.
Oscar Goldman, not MacGyver.
Yes.
Where he was just behind a table, nobody there. We could go up, had a great conversation with him.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there's still the opportunity for that, but there's a little bit more of a barrier, artificial barrier that's been kind of placed.
When Richard Anderson was here, there was no 20 feet of line between where you walked by and where he was.
And there hadn't been, like, the Phoenix incident.
True.
Where somebody had come in literally gunning for one of the celebrities.
Very true.
Or literally armed, but didn't, I think, have the chance. I forget the details.
Yeah.
And this was a show that same celebrity was at, of Jason David Frank. So I get the changes they're making. I conceptually agree. I really hate that there's the need for the metal detector for this sort of physical barrier and such. But I'd much rather have that than have anybody who's either going to meet a celebrity or celebrity coming to meet their fans come to any kind of harm because they don't have proper security.
Yeah.
So one of the things I found a little bit of a turnoff as we walked in Friday was at that stage, there was a guy with a mic almost kind of engaging with the people as they're walking in. And I'm like, I want no part of this.
Yeah.
And I know people listening to this may find this a little odd, but I'm an introvert.
Well, today as we were leaving, we walked by there and he was calling out to all the kids in the crowd. Kids, you know that voice your parents say is so loud you can't use it? You know the voice you use and your parents say, shut up? I want you to use that voice and your parents can't say no to you.
Yeah, this is your chance to be loud.
This is your chance to do what your parents would yell at you for and not get yelled at.
And we remained in the exhibit hall for how many minutes after that?
Yeah, but I mean, that was kind of his attitude towards what he was doing on the stage.
Well, and again, Friday wasn't that bad, but it was still, I'm not here to engage with person with microphone.
Yeah.
In a public venue. I want to go see the hall.
Yeah.
You know? So I found that a little off-putting. Friday, we did go to a panel. It was a YouTube 101.
Have you decided on what the panel could have been named?
Well, let me explain why I wanted to go. Been doing the podcast 10 plus years now. YouTube is out there. That seems like another venue. The question is, does it make sense to try to leverage the podcast onto YouTube? Does it not? Is that something I want to do in the future? Is it not? Whatever. I was hoping for literally a YouTube 101 where I could learn the ins and outs of it. And the two people who were on there, kind of the moderator who's been doing YouTube full time since
August.
This is middle of November.
Mm. But he has had the YouTube channel for, well, he created it 3 years ago.
No, a year and a half ago.
No, I thought he started using it a lot a year and a half ago.
He started using it a lot a year ago.
Oh.
He'd only had the thing a year and a half.
Okay.
And he does openings of Pokemon cards or something, as does the young lady he had join him on the panel. They've collaborated on something before. And she is, I believe her name was Laughing Pokemon.
Laughing Pikachu.
Laughing Pikachu. I sit corrected. And she's young enough that maybe her parents had that as a given name. Laughing Pikachu Smith or something. Laughing Pikachu Jones. I suppose it could happen. Don't think so. And there's something about you're sitting on a stage on a panel professing to be YouTube experts, which I'm not saying they are or are not, not making a judgment. She's been doing it 3 years.
Yeah.
Since she was 15.
And she has a contact she gets to talk to directly at YouTube because she has over 100,000 subscribers.
So clearly doing something. That's great. No problem there. But when you don't even give me your real name, not even her real first name, I get not giving the full name. She's in college, you know, this day and age, fine. I get that. But hiding under an alias, there's something about that I just find hilarious, given that we're in a culture that kind of looks down on this whole Superman Clark Kent alter ego concept, yet people have them all the time in real life.
Yes.
And she actually seemed to have a bit to say. I was a little disappointed that if you boiled it all down, there's no rhyme or reason to when you do or don't get viewers on YouTube. If you do or don't get promoted, you really can't control anything and they just don't know.
And whether or not your video is considered ad-friendly.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know. And they had a little more to say to it, and I don't sound harsh on that. And I'm not saying that it's a transparent enough system that it is knowable. But they didn't even really profess theories or whatever.
Exactly. They didn't feel that based on their experience, they had found something to keep in mind, something helpful.
I walked out of there with nothing actionable.
They had no advice on software to use. As for, do I need to buy a special camera? No, everybody owns a cell phone, so obviously you have the equipment.
An iPhone.
They did eventually say they use their iPhones, but they started out with, everybody owns a cell phone, so you have the equipment you need to record a video.
I had taken it as they had said everybody had one of these and held up their iPhone. And the implication is a cell phone would do it, but when they would, everything they always talked about seemed incredibly Mac, iPhone specific.
But they didn't seem to realize they were saying iPhone.
Yeah, that's fair enough. And they were interesting people. I could see where they would definitely potentially garner a following.
Their attitude was, don't expect to get rich off making YouTube videos.
Their advice in the attitude area I thought was great. Don't expect to make money. You're probably going to spend more than you'll make. You can do it on the cheap, though. But again, their point, if we're opening cards, we had to buy the cards.
Yeah.
But also do it because you love it.
Yeah. And be genuine in your personality and attitude.
Yeah. So I thought in that respect, they gave excellent advice. So I didn't feel like it was a wasted hour. But when the guy was saying he's been doing it for a year, I'm like, well, that doesn't seem like a ton of experience. 3 years. Okay. That's cool. And when he was professing to be doing this full time, while in the same sentence he saying he had been hired by Wizard to do all their shows.
Yeah.
Well, then that's your other job.
Yeah.
It's not like YouTube is keeping you, is feeding you, mm-hmm. paying the rent or whatever.
Yeah,
because again, nothing right or wrong about it, but
well, but he had said he quit his day job because he was doing YouTube full time, and then mentioned in that sentence that, oh, by the way, I work for Wizard World.
And for somebody getting paid to do these shows, to moderate other panels and do this panel and such, I felt with a panel name of YouTube 101, I should have come out of there with something actionable if that night I had wanted to start my YouTube channel, and got nothing on that. So I was a little disappointed.
He had no advice about naming a YouTube channel, or even whether or not the name of a YouTube channel is important. Mm-hmm. He had no specific advice on free software for PC users. He did for Mac users, iMovie.
Well, there was the lady who was saying, I was like, I've got a podcast, I want to do YouTube, I don't know what I'm doing. He had nothing.
Yeah.
And I don't expect him to have answers for every particular use case or anything, but when somebody said, it's like, oh, I want to do an art one, it's like, have you heard of so-and-so? Yeah, okay, you have. Let me call her.
Yeah.
That was a little odd. And it worked out well, because that person actually had one or two pieces of advice and whatnot, so it wasn't bad. It was an enjoyable panel, but it was not what I was expecting, but honestly, it's more like what I probably should have been expecting.
It was a bit more pep rally than informative.
Yeah. Inspirational, not educational.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with that, but
and calling the YouTuber that the lady had heard of and liked a lot falls into that both inspirational and pep rally attitude of, isn't it awesome to get encouragement from the YouTuber you really like?
Yeah, but there's also a little bit of almost the name dropping, look who I know.
Yeah.
Which I don't think was the guy's intent. But that panel did start on time, possibly even a few minutes early.
He waited until the exact minute it was supposed to start. He even commented on the, you know, we're just talking until the hour's supposed to start, just in case anybody else comes in. And then he looked at his phone and said, okay, now that it's the time.
He did a good job managing the time, keeping the conversation going. So as far as running a panel, moderating it, not bad.
Yeah.
And then I guess it was after that that we'd walk the hall and stuff. And again, it's a decent size show, but when I say that, keep in mind that I am considering this a city level show. Yeah. And I've mentioned this on other podcasts about conventions, that in my mind, there's city level shows where I'm in the city, I'll go. There's regional shows of I'll go maybe a state or two away. Okay. It's like up to Dallas or maybe a little further, whatever. But then there's kind of that more national stage level show. San Diego, New York, C2E2, Toronto. Beyond that, there's a few others that are somewhere either at the bottom edge of that or the top edge of the regional. And it's a little hard to tell where they would fit. DragonCon would be a good example of that, as well as some others. So for me, this is not a show that even if it were in San Antonio, I wouldn't have gone to all 3 days.
Yeah.
That would have turned this into maybe a, hey, do you want to drive down for the day and not bother with a hotel drive back that night? And this is a show that, frankly, over its 4 or 5 year history, has had some major ups and downs. I think it was last year where I think we both kind of felt it was a little bit of a bust. There was no major guest, whereas the show before or after Wizard did had tons of guests.
Well, once or twice they've had 4 or 5 big names cancel.
Yeah.
At least twice there's been just horrific weather.
And there were 1 or 2 times where the weekend it was on was just either it was too close to another holiday or it was
1 year they did it the same weekend as ACL, Austin City Limits, the music festival.
There have been a couple of times where I think their scheduling was not good.
Yeah.
Other times, once they had it on Halloween, that worked out well. There was tons of cosplay.
Yeah.
So, up and down as to, is it going to have a guest list that suits you or not? Again, this year, I thought they did really well on the guests.
I thought the guest list was quite impressive, but as you pointed out, nobody currently actively filming a currently airing show.
Yeah.
I mean, the closest we get is Michael Cudlitz, who I believe is no longer, I don't watch it, but I believe is no longer on The Walking Dead.
I believe you're correct, but I don't watch it either, so I don't know. Moving to Saturday real quick. We'll come back on kind of the overview stuff. We went downtown, grabbed lunch over at Frank, which is a hot dog kind of a place. Bumped into Trevor, which actually surprised me. I didn't even bother to check to Trevor this year to see if he was going, because last year we were going to meet up and have lunch over at Frank, but by the time I got down there, he had already left the one day, and he just was not amused with the convention last year.
Well, and he was saying this year he didn't expect to come down for it.
Yeah, because, again, what he's looking for, and we talked about it with him Saturday at Frank, that it comes down to, this isn't a comic show. If you're looking to buy original art from big-name artists, I would say Sean McKeever was the big-name artist, and that's... Whereas before, they've had some bigger-name people. I thought the Artist Alley was anemic this year in that respect. And if you're going for original art, art pages from comics, or, you know, big back-issue selection, you're going to be disappointed. So given how he blasted through the hall and then blasted the hall kind of last year, and understandably so, from his perspective, it wasn't that kind of a show.
Yeah.
I was surprised to see him, pleased to see him. He's a good guy. And he had brought his daughter. Hopefully they had a fun time. And then we headed over and did a bunch of panels. We were going to do one on podcasting, but by the time we got done with lunch, it was far enough into it that we didn't bother for that. We caught the tail end of the Jason David Frank one that was opposite the podcasting one.
I was going to say, in our defense, we entered the room after Jason David Frank's was supposed to have ended.
All right, his was supposed to end, and we were going there for the SWAT panel, and Jason David Frank is there for his fans. Now, if his panel is supposed to end at, I want to say...
3:15?
I want to say 3:15. I'm looking for it here. Give me just a sec. Yeah, 3:15. We entered the room at 3:15. He left the room at 3:40. The SWAT, CBS SWAT panel started at, well, it says here 3:30. I think 3:50 was about the time they started.
Now, I want to give the CBS people credit. They waited patiently, quietly.
Professionally.
Yes. Out in the hallway until 3:28.
Maybe even 3:30, 3:35. They waited a little before they even edged into the room. And even then, they were off on the side and very unobtrusive.
Exactly. They came in the rearmost door out of the three sets of doors in the room. They came in just far enough to get their stuff out of the way on the side of the room, so they were no longer blocking things out in the hallway.
Mm-hmm.
And then they stood aside and patiently stood where their CBS logo shirts were visible to Jason David Frank's up on stage. But they didn't say a word. They didn't tap their watches. They didn't do anything to show impatience. They just casually let him know, hey, the next panel is here.
Now, what's interesting is their panel was 3:30 to 4:15, 45-minute slot, during which they were doing a trivia giveaway and then showing the first episode of the new SWAT show. Now, I'm going to say that SWAT show, take out commercials, at least 40 minutes. Mm. 45-minute slot, and you're starting late.
Yeah.
And the next panel in there is at, I think, 4:30 or whatever. And they were out of there, I think, with time to spare before that next panel. Because once they got rolling, they got rolling.
Yeah.
So, and that included time to hand everybody the sunglasses for SWAT, the action figure for SEAL Team. A bag with the CBS shows and stuff like that. So the local CBS affiliate brought four or five people.
Yeah.
They were organized. They were professional. They knew what they were doing. I was impressed.
Yeah.
And the fact that the previous panel ran long is as much on Jason David Frank as anyone else. It's also on the people running the show.
Yeah.
One of the things I noticed, and this is just, I think, the nature of this kind of a show versus San Diego, which has a nonprofit status, an army of unpaid volunteers as a result.
Mm-hmm.
They can have two or three volunteers per room to monitor the time, to keep the traffic flow going or whatever you need to tell the talent, hey, it's time to wrap up or whatever. Plus, they're paying for the sound people and the stuff. There was one or two rooms that had microphone problems,
yeah,
which we'll get to when we talk about Sunday. But not having anyone managing the room and kind of, it's like, okay, wrap it up. The next panel should have started 5 minutes ago.
Yeah.
not entirely on Jason David Frank, although he was at least nice enough to apologize once he realized he'd run over.
I guess the reason I lay a little bit on him is he seems to have chosen to self-moderate his panel.
I certainly think it's on him, just not exclusively on him is my point.
Yes, I agree with that. But I think whoever moderates a panel, whether the actor chooses to self-moderate or there is someone from a website or whatever moderating, whoever chooses to moderate the panel takes on themselves a degree of responsibility about being aware of the time.
I absolutely agree, and I certainly did that when I moderated a panel at this convention a couple of years back. But I also think at the time they had somebody from Wizard that would also be pointing out, hey, wrap it up, just as a backup. So I think self-moderation, you get what you get.
Yeah.
It was fun to listen to him, though. There was a little bit of, once he starts talking, it's just, there's no filter at times.
Yes.
The SWAT team panel, I thought their trivia questions were ridiculous. What does SWAT stand for? I'm sorry, anyone who has watched any police procedural for more than a season or two has a good chance of knowing that one or guessing that one.
I liked it when somebody just blatantly guessed and got right. What was the first city to have a SWAT team?
Ah, LA, yeah. And then another one was where the guys from Big Bang, where do they work? What does that have to do with it?
Was it where they work or where they went to college?
What college they work at.
Oh, okay. Because, see, and I even told our parents about it later. I'm like, the only thing I got out of that question was, and I'll be kind enough not to say who, but we found out that someone's child applied and did not get accepted.
Yeah. So it was kind of funny. But then they did roll the first episode. After giving it a little bit of an intro. And the person who introed it was up front. It's like, for her, the first one was good, but it wasn't until the second or third that she was really hooked.
Now, she did survey the crowd for a piece of information I think CBS needed, and she got the answer I expected, which was who tuned in because of Shamar?
Yes, the lead, Shamar Moore from Criminal Minds. How many of you watched it because of that? Most of the hands that went up for that one.
Yeah. And then it's like, and did any of you have any other reasons for tuning in? And all the hands come down.
It's funny because Shamar was also mentioned today on Sunday.
Yes.
At the Joe Flanagan thing. He was talking about how he had gone to dinner last night at, I think it was a sushi place on South Lamar. Actually, we'd thought about going to last night. And he's like, he didn't want to drop names. So he goes there. It's like, yeah, Joe Flanagan. They're like, yeah.
No, actually.
They get there and they're asking for a name, and the guy he's with is like, Jason Momoa.
Yes. She's
like, okay, Jason Momoa. Okay. Thinks nothing of it. It'll be hour and a half.
Yeah. And Flanagan.
And about 5 minutes later.
Well, but Flanagan said he'd been having fun teasing Momoa about, and you thought you'd hit it big finally.
It's like, I guess you're not that big of a star. 5 minutes later, they get the table. Oh, so sorry, so sorry.
Yes.
And Joe Flanagan was, saying, I didn't want to drop the name, but Jason, boom, drops. But then he was also talking about how, I guess at another time, I forget if it was convention or he'd been working with, the subject came up because Flanagan was on at least an episode or two of Birds of Prey, and I'd forgotten he was on that.
Me too.
But Shamar Moore was the police officer on the Birds of Prey TV show that lasted like 10 episodes. Some point we need to do that
as an
episode. And they had gone out to eat or whatever, and Shamar was just working it, the whole thing, hey, I'm Shamar kind of a thing. And Flanagan's impersonation of Shamar doing, Shamar.
Yes.
Was hilarious, and just how that kind of, greased the wheels or whatever.
Yeah.
But it was one of those things that, it was fun seeing the show, having the local CBS affiliate promote a show like SWAT. Last year they'd done MacGyver.
Oh, I want you to tell them what the SWAT giveaway in the trivia bag was.
The sunglasses?
No, that's what we got.
Oh, in the trivia bag. And it's funny because I think they should have given those out. It was a fly swatter.
So do I.
I
thought that was priceless.
Yeah, I thought that was clever.
Yeah.
That's why didn't they do that at San Diego?
Yes.
Because it would have doubled as a fan.
Yes.
So we did that. What was the panel we did after SWAT?
Firefly.
Firefly, that's right. We went down to... Because that was upstairs in the conference room areas. Went downstairs to the ballroom for Firefly. That had, again, Jewel State, Summer Glau, and Sean Mayer.
Sean Mayer has apparently been watching a lot of Dexter recently.
And is just sarcastic as all get out.
Yes.
And it's funny because if I had to stereotype the three of them on the panel, I would say he was the, would it be creepy if I said Dexter? The go-to answer.
Yes.
And while it'll be unfair, I'm going to go say for Summer Glau, I'd be, huh, what?
No, actually, I think for Summer Glau, it's a combination of that and, can I say, either Care Bears or Dr. Quinn Medicine Woman.
It was funny because one of the questions Summer Glau got asked was, is it true you're a curse on shows and they get canceled after you get hired? It was more politely phrased than that, but not by much.
I don't think it was. It started out with, I've read on the internet that you're cursed as an actress and shows you're on are canceled.
The moderator was that's not cool comment.
Mm-hmm. She said moderator's prerogative. I'm bouncing that question.
But to Jewel's credit,
yes,
she's like, no, that's not fair. We've gotten cast on many things. Who's to say who's faulted? You know, just because somebody got cast and the show ends doesn't mean it's their fault.
Well, the other thing she pointed out is if you look across the board at the history of television,
yeah,
there aren't a lot of shows that go for the 14 seasons, the 20 seasons, even the 5 or 7 seasons.
Well, and if you look at sci-fi,
yes,
getting past that second season can be hard.
Yeah. And she said it's just not fair to accuse Ted McGinley or any other actor or actress.
The funniest part of that, I thought, was Sean basically saying, I've never heard that, followed by Summer of, I have.
Yes.
And just, there was a dripping aspect of the, this again.
Yes. I had never heard the Summer Blame Game.
I had, but I had heard a different version where she would constantly flub her lines or something, or there would be some profanity or whatever, and it would get to where they said her name, and I had always took it as Glau versus Summer, but whatever. But apparently, when things got flubbed up, they would, Summer, you know, blame her or whatever, because in theory, oh, she never gets it wrong or whatever. But apparently, Nathan took that to another show?
Yes.
Which I'm guessing would have been Castle?
She did not seem amused to have realized that on some set she never worked on, people would flub a line and blame Summer.
Yeah.
Oh,
The other funny part about that panel was Jewel has apparently stayed at Nathan's place.
Yes.
And his place is a shrine to Firefly.
That was hilarious.
Apparently in the guest bedroom, there are pillows with Malcolm's face on it or something.
Yes, that was funny. Well, and Summer Glau was saying somebody gave her a Afghan that had the Serenity logo on it, and she hadn't figured out what to do with it because it doesn't really fit with her house. And Jill's like, oh, send it to Nathan. It'll go perfectly in the guest bedroom.
Yeah.
Now, was it a, if you could have any superpower, what would it be? Was that what brought up the Summer Glau wishing she could understand toddlers?
It was from Dollhouse, if you could program yourself with any ability.
That's what it was.
And Summer's like, the ability to understand my 2-year-old.
Yes, yes.
It was funny. They clearly get along well, and they do a good panel together.
Yeah. Yeah, they
do. None of them was afraid to overtalk on the other, or you know, they didn't hog the mic or get too upset when all the Summer questions for so-and-so or whatever.
Well, and they help one another.
Yeah.
Which is nice.
It was a fun panel. It's unfortunate that Jewel's flight arrangement didn't allow her to stay long enough to do one with Joe Flanagan on Atlantis. I think better scheduling, the Flanagan panel we did Sunday would have had Momoa and Jewel State.
But Momoa didn't do any panels. Yeah. And going back to what the YouTubers said about do it out of passion, not for money, Wizard World Comic Cons are feeling less and less like they're being done out of fandom passion, and they're feeling more and more commercial.
I would agree with that.
And I think that's where some of the excitement when you walk out of the building that used to be there isn't.
Well, going back to the YouTube panel, if it had been two YouTubers, even if they were fairly new to the game, but they were just passionate and excited about sharing how to do YouTube and giving tons of advice, usable, tangible, here's how anybody could do it. Oh, you've got a phone, boom, we're going to tell you right now. Here's what you do. You've got what type? Okay, click this. That'll get your video thing camera going. Okay, do this. Now, at this point, you would just upload it. You'd do this. Here's your channel. You're good. You know, you're gone.
There was free Wi-Fi. If they had shot even a 2-minute YouTube video,
yes,
there in the panel,
yeah,
that they had each uploaded to their channels, and actually, if each of them had shot a video that's kind of one of those, either a live or a recorded, but a we're at Wizard World Austin Comic Con doing a panel on being on YouTube.
Well, and imagine if they had kind of almost handed off or whatever, one of them shooting it, and as they're walking through how to upload it, the other one's shooting them, shooting how to upload it.
Yeah.
And you wind up having a series of like 5 videos from here's the shooting to somebody shooting the shooting to getting it up.
Yeah.
That'd have been really cool.
Yeah.
Because then somebody could say, oh, yeah, they talked about it. I go to their channel.
Yeah, exactly.
So there is a commercialness to it more so than I felt than in the past. Not that it hasn't been there in the past. But there was also, again, some fun stuff. I thought this was probably one of the best years of programming they've had for Austin.
One of the comments that Jewel State made, which I think really speaks to why the Firefly cast, among others, do these reunions and come to these conventions, and the fact that it is not just about the money, despite all the articles we see saying, hey, have you noticed the celebrities are going because they make money? She looked out at the crowd and she said, you guys think Firefly changed your lives?
Yes. The recognition a lot of these people have that the show they did, that we're coming to see them for, in some cases, decades later, not only meant something major to us as fans to varying degrees, but in some cases to them, it was the moment of their career that just changed the trajectory of their life.
Yeah.
And their recognition of that, their kind of willingness to give back, I really like and appreciate. There's also just the quid pro quo, keep the fans happy, that gives you that next opportunity kind of a thing too.
Yeah.
But there's a big difference in my mind of the way that surfaced, say, in the Firefly panel, particularly with Jewel to a bit of a degree with Summer and Sean, versus almost the, I'm trying to think of a good way to phrase this, blatant fan management of Jason David Frank.
Mm, yeah.
Where he's so there for his fans, just ask him almost. And I don't think he's the least bit insincere. But if he was as respectful of his fans and of fans in general, he'd have ended his panel on time, been more respectful to the panel after him.
Yeah. Well, and I asked you about 10 minutes into his going over, where do you draw the line and how do you balance respecting your fans who came into the room for your panel and respecting the panel that comes after you and all the fans attending the convention?
The more I think of it, though, the more I blame the people running the convention. Because I think, certainly, Sunday, today...
Well, Firefly started 10 minutes late, yes, at least.
Most of the panels we went to, other than the YouTube one, started late.
Yeah.
Every panel, I think, started late.
Yeah.
Today, on Sunday, we get over there. First panel we go to was the WKRP in Cincinnati with Howard Hessman and Lonnie Anderson.
First panel of the day in that room.
At least 10 minutes late.
At least.
Which is disappointing. They had somebody, Lindy from purefandom.com, I think it was.
Yeah.
Moderate. I thought she did a great job moderating.
Yeah.
Know nothing about the website or whatever, but she clearly had done her homework on the show, whether it's because she was a fan or because she was going to do this or had done this for other conventions of Wizards. I don't know. Don't really care. She came across respectful and had some good questions. I don't think Howard Hessman is necessarily a morning person. Granted, it was 11:30, so not much of the morning left. And when there were a couple of times, it's like, I can't believe I'm saying this at this hour. What time is it? Of course, maybe he was just in character as Johnny Fever. Lonnie Anderson may as well be immortal or whatever in terms of, yes, she looked a little older than she did in the show, but not by much. And she was incredibly good with the recollection of, this is what we did, here's what happened. Complete with, you know, I didn't want to try out for the role because of this, because of that, you know. And this is stuff that happened like 40 years ago.
Well, she was talking about the fact that when they were doing the casting of the character Jennifer, she flat out said, I was on my soapbox about not wanting to be window dressing.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, I even went in to the audition with a speech in hand of, you know, I don't want to be window dressing. I want to be taken seriously. I want to be intelligent. There's no way I want to play your role. And they said, okay, read it that way. She said, she didn't use the phrase, but it was almost a put your money where your mouth is.
Well, they called her bluff because she hadn't practiced for the part. She didn't think she wanted it.
Yeah.
But she did an incredible job during the panel.
Yeah.
Better than some other people. And again, part of this is, when we walked into the room, we were there early. Mm. First panel of the day, we got there at least 20 minutes early. One of the other guys who got there early was a self-proclaimed WKRP and Cincinnati nerd.
Yes.
Very knowledgeable in the show. Huge fan. Had some personal connections. His dad used to work in radio and laugh about this, that, and the other, whatever. The show had a big impact on him. That's awesome. Now, I don't know how many people would consider themselves to that level of fandom for that particular show, but for every show, there is somebody that it just strikes that right chord or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And for whether you're on the Uber fan or the I've heard of the show, in any case, you're taking something that was a half hour or an hour aired television, take out commercials, and that will have had an impact on you in some way, shape, or form. But say that's an hour, whether it's an hour or half hour, it's about a week's worth of hellacious work for these actors and crew members to put this show together.
Yeah.
So something that was a 30-second bit that you just loved, they may have sweated over that for days.
Mm-hmm.
So do you remember when you said thus and so, and there are going to be times it's like, no.
Yeah.
Because it was spread over a 100-hour work week or whatever, 2, 3, 4 decades ago.
Well, and some of the comments that they made during the panel that I found very interesting. And after we left the convention center, we watched two of the episodes. Mm-hmm. They referred to the turkey drop and the commercial for Ferryman's Mortuary. And for Ferryman's, they were saying, you know, you get the script Monday, rehearse through Thursday night, and then Friday in the morning, they taped the episode and they had everything in the can before the audience came in.
Mm-hmm.
And then they were saying they performed it more like a stage play for the audience, so that if they flubbed something or something went wrong, they could just keep moving forward, knowing we've already got the shot in the can. We're trying to get genuine laughter, and we don't want to kill the flow and the role in front of the audience.
That was one of the times where I thought Howard Hessman really had some great comments to have, because there were a number of times he would just kind of hand the mic over to Lonnie. It's like, you take this one.
Yeah, they were having to share a mic, which added to the humor, actually.
Yeah, because this was the room that had the audio problems. One of the mics of the three didn't work. And in the panel or two panels after that, that was the one that the moderator had that would cut out in and out. It's like she turned into a Dalek. It was hilarious. Anyways, at this point, Howard has the mic, and he's talking about, again, how they're shooting this. How during the day, they've done the whole thing, including getting some close-ups and some stuff like that you just can't really do with a live studio thing. It's just too time-consuming and doesn't quite work. But he was going over how the guy, the show runner, producer, whatever, was the warm-up guy.
Yeah.
But he was keeping everybody in the story.
Yeah.
So between takes, this yada, yada, yada would go on, whatever. And now remember, because he would have it, you know, be keeping an eye of, oh, they're almost ready to shoot. Let me remind you of what you've just seen, where we're coming back into, so you're back into the flow.
Mm-hmm.
And the way Howard Hessman described that it was clear that this was something he had taken notice of.
Well, and he was saying that even just the jokes and the patter that Hugh Wilson was doing with the audience was keyed to the episode in some manner. Yes,
it kept them in the moment.
Yeah.
And not a, hey, let me tell you all that vacation to Bermuda, whatever kind of a thing. And, oh, we're back. Oh, now we're stop that. Let's get back to what we're doing.
Yeah.
And the difference between having an audience that is there watching and in your show versus one that thinks it's just, oh, I'm supposed to laugh now and can control the show that way.
Yeah, and it was funny the way he described how there can be kind of a mob mentality that takes over.
Well, and I think we had gone to a taping of Head of the Class that he did. Or did we do that after he left it?
I don't recall going to Head of the Class.
I thought there was one that we had done.
I went to Becker.
No.
What are you thinking?
Who took over Head of the Class after him? Don Knotts? Somebody took... We went to one. I thought it was Head of the Class, a live taping of that. Hmm. Maybe it was one I did and you didn't. We lived in San Diego.
Yeah.
So every once in a while, not often, you know, we'd go up, see a live taping and stuff. It was an interesting thing. And seeing the difference... Because the warm-ups I would see... it's just like a stand-up comedy kind of thing. It's getting you jazzed up, excited. You're in a wanted-to-be-entertained mood. Let's watch them film something.
I remember one stand-up guy doing the warm-ups at a sitcom taping, and he was doing the, hey, where'd everybody come in from? And somebody was in from, gosh, I don't even know, Sweden, Switzerland, somewhere,
mm-hmm.
Right? And because of their accent, they were from a village.
Oh.
And the guy found it hilarious. And so he would just go off on these village jokes and this, that, and the other. And then it's, oh, hey, we should go back to the show now.
Yeah.
And the show was just totally different than what he was doing.
Two competing narratives at that point.
Yeah.
So when Howard Hessman was saying we started with a rock band, we had that. Get you into the whole radio thing, and here's a guy guiding you through the story as we're coming and going in because we've got to reset.
Yeah.
That was a fundamental difference in how to record a show.
He was also saying he and Tim Reed did their own song picking and pitter patter for the songs, and that they were treated like a radio station by the record producers and companies.
Very interesting panel. Mm-hmm. There were a couple of times he got a little kind of deep, but not full of it, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
He actually had some profound things to say. I mean, he seems like a very intelligent guy. Mm-hmm. Very nice guy. And he was surprised by some of what was coming out of his mouth at some of this.
He did not expect deep conversation in this environment. He didn't know what to expect, was my take.
Yeah, I don't think he's done many... of these sorts of conventions before. I hope he continues doing them.
Mm-hmm.
Because maybe later in the afternoon. I don't know. Because he's one of those that has the potential of being a pivotal encounter for somebody at some point. Much the way I would say Bruce, the one who played Pike, with the girl.
Oh, Greenwood.
Bruce Greenwood. Was with a little girl we saw in
Dallas. Yeah.
She's like, how do you get over stage fright? And he's like, oh, let me explain.
Yeah.
Come up here. And he's walking her through. Here's all these people. They're out there wanting you to have success, good time here. Okay, let's have you do something. See, you've been in front of a stage. And he's basically, I don't say deprogramming her from stage fright or whatever, but that's the kind of thing that one encounter, should she go on to become a successful actress or whatever, could have just a profound influence on not just her, but who knows how many people. And I think Howard Hessman has just some great insights into not only that particular show, but the time and place it was at, the impact on some of the culture it had. Because they also mentioned, Lonnie was saying how at one point she blew a kiss to Venus Flytrap through the station window, and the South wouldn't play that.
Certain stations throughout the South said, nope, not showing it.
And he's like, okay, kids, make sure you understand what she is saying here. White woman, black guy, no physical contact, you know.
Yeah, wall between them.
Yeah. And the moderator, how old would you say she was? She was
30s.
Sure, we'll go with that. Tops.
Yeah.
Young.
Yeah.
Not around when the show was on the air originally, I'm willing to bet.
Yeah.
Okay. Which, again, impressed me she was fairly knowledgeable on it. Not that that's hard with Hulu and a little bit of time. But to her, that was just, you've got to be kidding me kind of a moment. Whereas, no, that's how society was.
But I liked Lonnie Anderson's reaction.
Oh, Lonnie basically said that she and Tim Reed made a point of every episode thereafter just having contact, physical contact.
Yeah.
And just kind of...
hand on shoulder, something.
Something.
Yeah.
And it, again, it's funny how much the world has changed between then and now. I thought it was a really good panel. They gave a lot of really great answers. They were very respectful to the audience. And
again, it was a panel where they helped one another a lot, as well as balancing one another. And they worked really well together.
And Howard Hessman was very upfront a couple of times on, this was 40 years ago, guys. My recollection of this is hazy.
Yeah.
You know, and as she was saying something, there was a couple of times, oh, yeah, okay, I remember now, kind of a thing.
Well, it amused me when she was talking about, you know, all the memos that come down from the network, and they were on during prime time, and they had to meet all the standards and
practices.
Family-friendly
show, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and well, one of her, the way she phrased things at one point just busted me up. She's like, you know, here's Johnny Fever, whose apartment has a plant.
Mm-hmm.
Now, eventually, Howard Hessman feels honor bound to clarify it was a plastic marijuana plant.
An artificial marijuana plant. But that never got the comments. Aspects of how visible certain parts of Lonnie Anderson apparently were would get comments. And she's like, but what about the...
she's like, they're complaining that on the cold set.
Yes.
I can't control certain things. And they blatantly put, on purpose, the marijuana plant in the apartment.
The funny follow-up on that was another question of, what are some of the weirdest things you've gotten? And Howard Hessman says some of the things he's gotten are now legal in certain states.
Yes.
And some question about how you first really got into music or whatever. And he had made some reference to go into something that the next year was officially called the Willie Nelson.
Yeah, the Dripping Springs reunion, I think it was.
The Dripping Springs reunion or whatever. It's what became the Willie Nelson Festival or whatever.
Yeah.
But just that's how long he's been in with some of this, of music and some of the culture. And
yeah.
When he had seen, because they'd wanted him to be the sales guy. And he's like, no, I want the DJ role.
Yeah.
I'll read for the other one, but I want the DJ role.
Yeah. Well, and Johnny Fever wasn't meant to be a regular and with the whole series.
Yeah, apparently after the pilot, he was just going to move on to another station or whatever. I mean, if you look, I watched the two-part pilot last night, so Saturday before today, Sunday, going and seeing the panel. Because it'd been ages since I'd seen the show. And it was very much set up as the new producer, station program manager, whatever, comes into the station. He and the boss are the two leads.
Yeah.
So, Andy Travis is the character name. I forget.
Gary Sandy.
Gary Sandy's the lead. Gordon Jump, the other lead. And then the others are just the colorful characters at the station they have to deal with.
Yeah.
But it became a true ensemble show.
Well, today we watched the Turkey Drop and the commercial episode. The Turkey Drop is the 7th episode, so fairly early in the first season. And one of the things I pointed out to you when we were watching it, you see Carlson's office, you see Jennifer's reception area, and of course you've got the DJ booth.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot do a radio show without the DJ booth. Okay. But then we get further into the season, and I've forgotten what episode the commercial one was, but I think it's only like 6 or 7 episodes later.
Yeah.
But to me, it's kind of the show took a hiatus for Christmas in production. And when they came back, they changed up their sets.
Instead of seeing the front, we're now behind the scenes.
Yeah.
And seeing the bullpen versus
Jennifer's reception area.
Well, it's interesting because I would say a thematic revival-ish of the show, a retooling of it, would be news radio. Same general concept. Obviously, it's its own show. But one of the things that I recall from that, because again, you had, I'm forgetting the actor's name, but the equivalent of Gordon Jump's character. And then you had, I think, Scott Foley's the equivalent of the Andy Travis character. And Stephen Root was the other actor. Those two arguably the leads or whatever. But when you see the set, you've got the bullpen, another layer, but then on top is the DJ booth. So you could always see that to where you could have somebody doing something on air. Maybe you're hearing, maybe you're not, as you're looking at the bullpen and other stuff's going on. It was one that I think took, here's what a WKRP show kind of thing does. This is a physical layout that facilitates some even more story potential.
Yeah.
So, great show. And I thought, again, Lonnie Anderson, Howard Hessman, would you expect them at a comic book convention?
Yeah, exactly.
No, I wouldn't.
But it was one of the panels I was determined to go to.
It was a ton of fun. I'm glad I got an opportunity to hear them both speak.
Yeah.
You know, she was a lot more vocal than he was. He's just a more laid-back guy.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if he would identify as being himself an introvert versus an extrovert, even though he's an actor. And again, fantastic panel. Well worth doing. I'm glad they brought them.
Well, yeah, it was interesting when he said the first time he read that script, he felt like he knew Johnny Fever.
Well, because he'd been around the music business. He knew DJs.
Yeah.
He got that role.
Yeah. And I think there was an aspect just seeing him sitting up there on stage where you could almost see his mind spinning back to the, even if I don't remember it, I remembered the Johnny Fever mindset.
Yeah.
Yeah. So for me, that was just huge fun.
I do think one of the challenges for celebrities on these things is, again, we take a half hour, hour episode that's just very clear in our minds. For them, that's just one work week out of years of their lives.
Well, actually, moving to the next panel, which was Emma Caulfield and Charisma Carpenter, Buffy.
Mm-hmm. Actually, that was the last panel.
Was that? Oh, sorry.
It was Flanagan was before.
Oh, that's right. Okay, then moving two panels ahead for just a moment. Emma Caulfield said she's only seen the Buffy episodes she was in once.
Well, and Charisma Carpenter referred to the work amnesia kind of.
Yeah.
Because they were saying how they would work 12, 14-hour days. It would take them 8 days to shoot an episode. So 100 hours of their time for 45 without commercials or whatever.
Yeah.
Episode for us.
Well, and Charisma Carpenter said she hasn't watched the Buffy episodes she wasn't in because how depressing would it be to see the world she left?
Yeah. On the one hand, I get it. On the other hand,
for her, it's a, aw, look, life went on without me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Joe Flanagan.
He was a lot of fun. There was an aspect, I don't want to say he looked disheveled.
Yes.
But like he had just gated in.
Yeah.
Very quick-witted, very acerbic sense of humor, and just again of giving kind of Momoa a little bit of a hard time.
Okay, so almost every panel, it seems like, had one of those questions where you're like, okay, so this is why some panels now have a person next to the microphone kind of vetting questions. The question from this one was basically, are you lonely being up
there?
Yeah,
with two co-stars who aren't here at the moment but are at the convention.
Are you lonely?
I will say I was surprised. I think it was with the Firefly panel. 11 minutes late and 2 minutes in, they go to questions.
Yes. Almost every panel went practically straight to questions.
I thought the one with Flanagan, that moderator was the same one as before, had some really good questions for him and
yeah.
For a bit and waiting for somebody to get in line.
Yes.
So I appreciate it when they've got a moderator that not only is knowledgeable of the material, has some good questions, but also is a good interviewer and whatnot, a good conversationalist.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I've moderated a panel or two before, and I'm not going to say I'm particularly great at it.
Interviewing is hard.
Well, doing it on a live stage, you've got to kind of monitor the group. How's the guest doing? Are we on time? And
yeah.
What is that next thing? But I want to stay in the conversation. And there were a time or two where Flanagan would, yeah, I'm the guy who at one point took my kids out of school for 6 months and we're going to go see some museums and, of course, pick the ones in the Middle East because, well, you know, yeah, ISIS attacked a couple of weeks ago, but the rates are low. It's a good time. I want my kids to see they shouldn't be scared of stuff. And when he was all done kind of describing that this is their vacation sort of a thing, the moderator, she was like, I don't know what to say to that.
Yeah.
Kind of, you did what?
Yeah, he's like, either I gave my children an amazing life experience or I'm a really bad dad. I'm not sure which.
Mm-hmm. He was hilarious.
Yes.
He also had a pretty good story about how he's got a friend he cycles with who's the bass player of some band.
Yeah, a conspiracy theory nut.
Yeah, and he was always trying, because the question was, is there a real Stargate program? Was kind of sort of what the question was, but not so blatantly so.
Well,
and he goes off on this tangent of he's got a friend who's, first, let me give you my answer in Morse code and starts blinking or whatever. How does he know? But he's very much an anti-conspiracy kind of a guy. If we can barely get a package from one side of the U.S. to the other, and now you think this could be done in secret of this sort of magnitude? Really? But the space player's a huge conspiracy nut. So he had talked with, I don't know who, about the two of them, because they would say, oh, how would you like to do the show? It's like, no, but how about we do a debunking of
conspiracies. These
conspiracies? You know, the two of us will go knock on Buzz Aldrin's door. It's like, did you land on the moon?
Yeah, but back up. What prompted the Buzz Aldrin one? Is he knew someone who had walked up to Buzz Aldrin.
Oh, yeah. At another convention or whatever. It's like, studio whatever at CBS. That's where it all went down. You didn't go to the moon and all this sort of a thing.
The look on his face, he gets the end of that. He's like, you're just standing there next to him going, did you seriously just say that to Buzz Aldrin?
Yeah. I would have watched at least some of the episodes of such a conspiracy show just for the eye rolling.
Yes.
I think that's a Survivor-esque show. You have two teams, the conspiracy provers and the conspiracy disprovers.
Yeah.
Who can put up the better argument? Choose what to believe. So he was very interesting, had some good stories.
He had a I'm Han Solo.
Oh, with the casting of Momoa, that they were getting rid of Ford from the first season. They were going to have somebody else. He was flying down to L.A. To read against the other people who are going to be his kind of right hand man or whatever. And he hits Momoa, and he's got dreads. He's got a ripped shirt and all this kind of a stuff. He's like, "Do I have any loose change for this guy? You know, whatever kind of a." Oh no, he's reading. Okay.
Not a panhandler. Guess that's good.
Yeah. And just they get to talking and he realizes he likes the guy. And that, you know, he may not be somebody now, but he's going to be somebody.
Someday he going to hit big in movies.
Which, of course, he has. But he really apparently went to bat for Momoa as he thought he would be the interesting kind of a guy for that kind of role. But somebody at one point had asked, so why do you want somebody who's
taller than you,
better looking than you, buffer than you, or whatever.
Yes.
On your show.
Yes.
It's like, yeah, that's a really good question. There's a good self-deprecating sense of humor that Flanagan has.
Yeah, I loved it when he said, so, you know, I was Han Solo, he's Chewbacca.
Yeah, because you can see that.
Yes.
And apparently they live not far apart, so he sees them periodically.
He sends over a carrier pigeon.
Yes. It was fun. I don't know how many times he's done these sorts of panels. I'm sure he's been to many conventions. But just the stories he tells of, like, when he was flying back to L.A., I guess, with Richard Dean Anderson at one point and was asking him for some advice early on. Anderson's like, why are you asking me? It's like, doing a spinoff of your show. It's like, nah, got nothing. About a half hour later, don't do the gobbledygook. Huh? The technobabble stuff. If you're good at it, they'll keep giving it to you. And the way he's describing this, I can hear those words coming out of Richard Dean Anderson's kind of a mouth.
Yes.
In the way he would have said them.
Yes.
And sure enough, he realized that, you know, this is a pearl of wisdom. So every time he would get some, let McKay say that. So McKay would get these pages. Apparently also he and Momoa would just give David Hewitt, who played McKay, just all kinds of hard time. But they seem to have a lot of fun on that show. Yeah, he was a good guest. Now that there's a Stargate comic, makes sense at a comic convention. But again, he's sci-fi. And he commented on how nice it is for sci-fi shows, particularly when they were doing Atlantis, to be able to get, in some cases, very immediate feedback.
Yeah.
In how a lot of the people he knows in the acting business, they just don't have that.
Yeah.
there's not the kind of venue for other shows to really interact with their fan base the way there is for a lot of these genre shows. And he seemed to really appreciate that.
Yeah.
So I thought that was a good panel. Again, I thought the moderator, I think it was Lindy. Pure Fandom, did a good job on that. Then the final panel we went to today was Charisma Carpenter and Emma Caulfield from Buffy and Angel. And then one of the other people, I guess Liz from Pure Fandom, moderated that. And it was interesting. They were having some microphone problems at one point.
The batteries were dying on the cordless mics.
Yes. So one of them didn't work. At one point when the moderator was saying something, it was literally chopping in and out every other syllable or whatever.
What got me was when the guy from Wizard came in knowing what had happened and went up to the moderator while one of the actresses was talking and said, give me your mic and I'll fix it. She said no.
They thought they could do the thing without mics as part of it.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry, it's too big of a room. And
well, backtracking to the WKRP in Cincinnati panel, Lonnie Anderson had with her someone she knows, I don't know how, but this person was down at the signing tables with her and had come up to the room with her. And when the three of them came in, this person deliberately went and sat in the rearmost seat or in row that had people in it. And when someone up at the table was having a mic problem and said, well, I guess you can hear me without the mic, and started talking, that was the person who screamed out, microphone, to let them know you need to be using the microphones even if you have to share.
I respect that lady for doing it and Lonnie Anderson for having somebody with her to kind of monitor that sort of a thing.
Yeah. But there again, it shouldn't be on the personality, celebrity, the talent, whatever the right encompassing word there is, to bring someone with them that they can trust to do that for them.
To me, that comes down to you have a checklist for the room, and at the end of the day, you make sure you've recharged all or have them recharging for the mics and the batteries and all that kind of stuff. And if you need to, you swap out the batteries before every panel or whatever.
He ended up having to open a fresh battery because I could hear the plastic being opened before he finally got the mic consistently working at the Buffy panel.
Yeah, it was. The audio problems were a little disappointing, as were the constant delays in getting the panel started. I agree, it's only 5-10 minutes per panel, but it's like, come on.
Well, and the moderator at the Buffy one had been the moderator at the Firefly panel. At the Firefly panel, the three actors had all commented that it was a really special experience filming, in part because Joss had handpicked an entire team, pulling people he knew so well from Buffy, from Angel.
Well, and who knew each other.
Exactly.
So the point that Firefly, in my mind, not only came up fully formed, part of how it did that was you've got somebody who at this point has done a couple of different shows. Buffy, Angel, Dollhouse. I'm trying to think if there was another one in there or not. But he had this stable of talent behind the scenes that he could draw from and handcraft his crew and get somebody that just from day one, they're used to working together to varying degrees and can do a show. And what an advantage that gave the Firefly cast. But then when the question was posed to Buffy and Angel, Charisma Carpenter and Emma Caulfield, was it that way for you versus, okay, you're talking to yesterday Firefly people who had the advantage of the 10 years worth of experience of production that's, in Charisma Carpenter's case, was there at day one.
Yeah. The people who got the benefits of what you helped create, do you feel from day one and the moment you started creating it, you had the benefit?
Yeah. I thought it was a misunderstanding of what the others had said.
Yeah. Now, I found it interesting because right now, again, November 2017, we are seeing out in that pesky real world this, how to describe it, but this large incidents of Hollywood people having careers fall apart with sexual harassment, whether it's the
misconduct scandals,
the allegations, the investigations going on. And we had a lot of very strong, accomplished, I'm debating if the word powerful is an appropriate word, but certainly empowered women at this convention. And the topic only came up once, and really it came up by accident, I thought.
Well, and it was interesting because Charisma Carpenter had kind of pointed out that one of the shows she's really enjoying is House of Cards, and how there was an opportunity to let the show really comment on that sort of misconduct scandal, which is hitting Kevin Spacey, that's gotten the show canceled. And her basic point was they could have continued the show for a season without him, had his character's wife now be president, and just kind of, well, this could happen.
Yeah.
And I think the direction she would have taken the show creatively with that comment, very interesting.
Yeah. And I think using a show like that for that type of social commentary would have been very powerful. It would have been a wonderful and remarkable thing to do.
Well, the other thing about the question the moderator had of, you know, did you find this to be a special set versus all the others you've worked on kind of a deal, was an interesting question to pose to those two, whereas Buffy and Angel for Charisma, that was, I don't want to say the pinnacle of their career. They've done a lot since. Mm-hmm. That's what they're best known for. They haven't really had that other show or two or three to that they were on for many, many years to use as a comparison point or whatever. I mean, you look at Charisma Carpenter's career, which I don't think is a bad one by any stretch. I think she's very talented. But you look at David Boreanaz, who went on to do Bones, who's now gone on to do SEAL Team.
Yeah.
And
Lonnie Anderson was saying she's done six series, which is kind of a mentally, I want to go look what those were, because to me, WKRP in Cincinnati is a claim to fame for her.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the first one that leaps to mind when I think of her.
Yeah, I'd be hard-pressed to name what the other ones would have been.
I think part of that is that she just nailed that character so well that you see her, you think that character.
Well, and also, there's that breakout character for somebody.
Yes. Well, what
Nathan
was
Nathan Fillion was on Castle for 7 years, but he's still Malcolm Reynolds because that's what really made him.
What Nathan was Jewel State's joke when someone accidentally called her Kaylee?
Oh, we look identical, kind of a thing.
I get that she all was the time.
Very graceful on that.
Yes, yes.
Kind of. I know what you mean. Ask the question.
Yeah, but like you said, very graceful and just very kind about. Yeah, I get it all the time. We look so much alike, and just.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's funny to see how the actors react to certain questions. There was one with the Charisma and Emma where, again, the question is kind of a, what were you thinking? And the question was, well, you know how fans sometimes have these odd dreams about celebrities and stuff. Have you as a celebrity had any odd dreams about fans?
A specific fan.
Yeah.
Which made the question creepier.
And there was kind of a back and forth up there of, what is she asking? And then when the moderator's like, I'm not quite going to allow this, but it got to the point where clearly both Emma and Charisma clearly understood what was being asked, and in unison, no.
Yeah. Yes.
I mean, the timing on it was hilarious.
Yeah.
And the moderator's like, I have never heard that question before, kind of.
Well, and I think there is an element of con attendees that's their goal.
Yeah, that's why I think there's a aspect of moderation. We're going to questions too early is a mistake. And knowing the questions that should be asked that we want to hear.
I do think it's interesting when people ask, what have you read lately and what are you watching?
I agree. I did feel when Joe Flanagan was asked, what's the museum you recommend we all go to?
I think that needed backstory, for
context.
Lack of a better term. Yeah.
Does he go to a lot of museums? Is he an art expert? Why should I care? He gave a great answer or two.
He gave several great answers. I mean, talking about all the art in Berlin, when he was talking about living in Paris for a year and going to the Louvre constantly and just barely scratching the surface of it. Clearly, he has a connection to art. But the fact that a person in the room knew it, and he knew it. And he flat out said, okay, now that I've gone off on this for a while and clearly nobody has a clue why, shall I mention that great art museum in the Pegasus Galaxy?
Yeah, he kind of, let me bring it into character and end on that. But it comes down to, there was a question where Emma Caulfield was referencing Walking Dead, and with the death of, and she stops her statement just dead right there with a, can I say this or not? Kind of, you know, I'm about to spoil something. This, I could get crucified if I do this. And I think it was the guy behind us. Oh, it's been 2 years. Yeah, for this crowd, go ahead. Which, you know, on the one hand, I get. On the other hand, I respect Emma for not wanting to spoil it. I get where charisma was coming from when she's saying, hey, it's been 2 years. It's on you if you haven't watched it. I get that.
Well, charisma flat out said, if it's aired, period, it's on you if you haven't seen it.
Yes, if it's aired, if you haven't seen it.
Yeah.
I actually vehemently disagree with that, in so much as I right now am probably in the process of ingesting 200-300 different stories.
Yeah.
Now, some of them I am waiting for that next installment of because I'm current. Others, I'll admit, Gotham, I'm like 2 years behind on. I'd appreciate it if somebody didn't spoil that.
Yeah.
And I get going to a convention, there's risk of that. I skipped certain panels because I was pretty sure they were going to talk about what just happened in the Thor movie I'm not going to see until it comes out on Blu-ray.
Yeah.
And probably not immediately at that point, necessarily. So, the whole spoiler level acceptance and stuff, yeah, it's been 2 years. I get there has been an opportunity, but the guy behind us, his thought being, if you're enough of a fan to be at this convention, you've had enough time to consume everything you would possibly want to.
Well, yeah, and that's the thing, because that wasn't a Walking Dead panel.
Yeah. Which is part of why, again, I was very appreciative. Not that I care, and again, she said right after that, and it's like, fine, I don't care, I'm not watching that.
But yeah.
We've had other things spoiled at other conventions. And
yeah. Well, and in the case, if you're thinking of the one I'm thinking of, a show aired on Thursday, and we went to a Friday through Sunday convention that we had had to drive to Thursday night.
Yes.
So we hadn't been able to see the Thursday show because we were going to their convention.
Yes. That annoys me.
And they spoiled it. And I'm like, on the one hand, I get you feel we should be current on shows, but getting to your convention prevented that.
And that's one of those things where I get a little frustrated because I feel that there are people who, I'm trying to think of a political way to phrase this, are fans of less stuff. Not to say me being a fan of more is better by any stretch, but just because you're watching one show, reading four comics, whatever it may be easier for you to keep up on that. That's fine. For me, I like to enjoy a lot of things.
I know someone who believes if it's mentioned in TV Guide in an article, or if it's in the episode description, by definition, is not a spoiler.
And I understand that rationale. Again, my mindset is I want to see the story unfold in the story.
Yeah.
And that, frankly, some of the stuff given in TV Guide, in a comic book solicitation blurb, or wherever,
yeah,
is a spoiler that should not have been given out.
When the episode description names the bad guy, then an episode spends half the episode taunting you with, who's the bad guy?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, that episode description was a spoiler.
I've had times where because somebody had told me a particular movie or TV show or whatever was really great or really horrible, it changed the way I watched the movie.
Yeah.
With it's really not that bad. I don't see what they were complaining about. Or it's really not the best thing on the planet that's ever been done. Why were they raving so much and saying it was?
Yeah.
You know, versus, what would I have thought of the thing if I hadn't had expectations pre-calibrated? It's interesting seeing celebrities' kind of views on spoilers or whatnot. There are a couple of very much anti-spoilers because, again, the sanctity of the storytelling is paramount to them.
Well, it was interesting during the WKRP in Cincinnati panel when Howard Hessman was saying that part of the, they're having problems getting rights to the original music. So re-releasing the episodes, some of the episodes have what they referred to as sound-alike music, whereas others have covers, but it's the same song. He said there's an episode where he riffed for 2 minutes on Linda Ronstadt, and I guess
Baby Baby.
Yeah. And he said they couldn't get Baby Baby by Linda Ronstadt, so they just cut that 2 minutes out. He said, no, I'm saying it's a great 2 minutes, but they cut 2 minutes out of the episode.
I'm almost wondering how that would play if you had dropped in, I don't know, Britney Spears or something. That would be a hilarious thing, would be to take a show like WKRP and get current music rights to drop in,
mm-hmm.
both to fit and to subvert.
Yes.
The original content. Be hilarious. Emma Caulfield and Charisma Carpenter obviously have worked together, know each other pretty well through the convention circuit, whatever. The way they played on stage was a little odd at times. There was one or two times where, I don't know if it was just too hot, too cold up there, Emma had taken her jacket off, she's putting it back on, just about wax Charisma.
Yeah.
She's like, are we done over there?
Yes, yes.
I think they are on good terms, but not like, you know, best buds. Whereas other people, it's clear, particularly like with the Firefly cast and whatnot.
Yeah.
And if you think about it, the amount of time that Charisma and Emma overlapped on Buffy would have been a year. So it's understandable. It's also funny to listen to some of these people talk about how, because they've worked with other people on other shows than what they're on this particular panel for, but, you know, how Charisma had apparently been out last night with Holly Marie Combs, a friend of hers who works here in town, and stuff like that. And again, Flanagan mentioning Momoa because they worked together here.
Mm-hmm.
Just the kind of the interconnectedness of some of the stars.
Yeah.
Both in terms of where they've worked and just which conventions they've been to together.
Yeah.
There was one or two people who were asking questions, and one of them was asked of Charisma, of this play you did in New York about this, that, and the other, and she's just looking of clearly not remembering. It's like, what is this guy talking about?
Yeah.
It's like, well, you did this back, and he's like, no, I'm pretty sure you didn't. And
yeah.
He finally realized he'd gotten his facts wrong, and it was somebody else who had done this. And she's like, it sounds fascinating, but I didn't do it.
One of the questions that amused me endlessly, and it was a phrasing thing, was after they had been asked if there was a reboot or a reincarnation of the Buffy show, would you participate? Then there's this other question that says, given your Buffy was the reboot of the movie.
And it came down, well, he didn't say of the movie. Given yours was the reboot, if it had been in the style of the movie, and he didn't clarify that this was a reimagining of the movie take, so it took Charisma a little bit to get where he was going. And once she did, he's like, well, yeah, there was no Buffy 2 movie, and the Buffy movie wasn't what Joss set out to do. We were the reimagining of it, so yes, we were the reboot of sorts. Or really, reboots, adaptation is the word I would have used.
But yeah, exactly. Like I said, it was a word issue. But I liked her point of, we went how many seasons versus... Yeah,
we
went
7 seasons. We did well.
There was no Buffy movie 2?
Yeah. Yeah. Asking a question at one of these panels, there is an art form to that.
Yes.
In terms of giving the proper context to explain the question, but not spending too much time leading up to the question of, is there going to be a question?
Yes.
And not the, oh, I love you, thank you for coming, that everybody seems obligated to do or whatever.
Yeah.
I think there's also an art and a science to the moderation that I think has gotten formulaic. Oh, that's a great question. Thank you so much. I'm wanting to itemize the how much the so much is to thank at that point of a... And some of the moderators felt a little more sincere than others at times with the thank you so much.
Well, at Firefly, the moderator didn't seem to know Firefly fans are brown coats.
I guess that didn't stick out as much for me. I'm not saying you're wrong. I didn't pick up on that. It comes down to having... And again, Wizard apparently is flying people from place to place to moderate these things. I don't know where the Geek Fandom or whatever website these two were from for today versus the guy from the YouTube panel and stuff. But if you're flying people around, they need people that are pretty deep in the shows and the genres they're covering.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's particularly hard.
Yeah.
Or so particularly hard that you necessarily need to fly people to other cities.
Yeah.
And I get that there's a definite skill set to moderating a panel, which I by no means claim to have, of being personable, a certain degree of charisma, and keeping a conversation going, engaging the celebrity, getting stories pulled out of them gracefully, managing the fan questions and such. It's a definite skill set, not an easy one to acquire and to master. And I thought many of the people they had did a fairly good job.
Yeah.
I would say the persistent frustration I had was just they didn't start on time.
Yes.
By and large, I thought they had a very good guest list this time. I thought they had more panels this year than in most of the past ones that I've been interested in here.
Yes.
And I enjoyed the panels.
Yeah.
Again, a little disappointed in the podcasting 101 because what it purported YouTube. To be... YouTube, sorry. We skipped the podcasting one because it was opposite one or two other things. But the YouTube one, I was expecting more tutorial. Didn't get that. But that's as much naming and stuff as anything else. But this is a kind of a show that to call it a comic book convention is a misnomer. It is a fandom convention. It's certainly heavy on autographs, photo ops, and panels with the celebrities, which I think is awesome. I'm all for that. But to me, it's a separate sort of a thing than a strictly comic book convention.
Yeah.
But worth going to. A lot of fun. Like I said, there are a few things here and there that could have been a little better, but I thought this was a much better convention than it was last year.
Mm-hmm.
There's some question as to how Wizard's doing financially and potentially would it even be around this time next year. I don't know that they have announced another Austin show.
I was not aware. Normally we see postcards that have a list of all the upcoming conventions, and I wasn't aware of those this time.
What I overheard from people a row or two behind us at one of the panels today was it was still to be determined.
Okay.
But I'm not positive they were talking about Austin.
Now, I know in the past, people at Wizard have told me our convention center is really hard to book a 3-day weekend at.
And I can understand that. I don't think they need 3 days.
Yeah.
Because as it was, it felt pretty early on Sunday that we were seeing signs of them shutting down aspects.
A full Saturday and a full Sunday would do it.
Yeah.
The problem is when they've done 2 days, they've done Friday and Saturday.
Well, and I don't like that because it's hard to know. I mean, they didn't have the schedule up until a week and a half ago.
Yeah. You're talking about a relatively expensive convention ticket.
Yeah.
To a convention that is really a commerce convention as opposed to an attend, have fun, enjoy convention. So asking people to take a day off from work.
Well, asking them to take a day off work before you've posted the schedule of even when the exhibit hall is going to be open.
Yeah.
Because I think last year I took the Friday off and then it's like, well, it doesn't start until 4.
Yeah.
Well, there was a vacation day I burned.
Yeah.
Which isn't a huge deal necessarily, but this time I didn't. I just ducked out of work a little early and it worked fine. Made for a busy Friday, busy weekend.
Yeah, but you didn't leave work till 4:30 instead of 5, so early is...
Yeah, early is relative. It was really not that early.
Yeah.
I hope they do another show in Austin because with it in Austin, it's certainly worth going to. If it was in San Antonio, I would consider it if it were as even... For any further than that, the next closest city would be, I guess, Houston. Probably wouldn't.
You know, we were talking about the guest list,
mm-hmm.
About how there were not all that many people who are on current active shows. I think a Battlestar Galactica reunion might be interesting. Mary McDonnell is just wrapping up her final season of Major Crimes. Grace Park has just left 5-0.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is on Longmire, which has just aired its 6th season on Netflix. So
there's a certain wisdom of having guests from shows that are not actively filming around the time of the convention because the odds of cancellation drop substantially.
Yeah.
But there's also an aspect of given all the WB shows, all the other comic related shows and sci-fi shows on right now, having nobody from any of them. And it's funny because even Summer Glau, who was on Arrow, they don't even mention as that.
I think the WB shows are going to Heroes and Villains.
I certainly think so because Stephen Amell is connected to Heroes and Villains. He's kind of the ringleader of that group of stars, which makes sense. And that's a show that's worth checking out.
Yeah.
And certainly for any of these sorts of shows, base your decision on going on is the guest list to your interest or not. And if one or two of the big names or the key names that you're interested in bow out, is it still worth going to?
Yes.
Because even if they don't have a current show, there could be a death in the family. There could be weather-related traffic delays or whatever.
They could get a job.
Yeah. They could have something come up where they can't make it. So.
I forget what the question was at the Buffy panel, but both Charisma and Emma had the answer of, I like working.
Oh, do you like working on movies versus TV better? And it was certainly from Charisma of, I like work, making me think she'd like to be getting more than she is.
Yeah.
And that surprises me because I think, again, she's a terrific actress, and her being on a show would make me that much more likely to watch it than somebody else being cast in that sort of a role.
I can see that.
But so, oh, the other thing I wanted to mention about the booths and stuff, there was the beer booth, the
Wild Bills.
Wild Bills. I am not a big fan of conventions that have booths that basically wind up with people having big mugs of liquidy stuff that can splash or whatever. Not that everyone splashes into me, whatever, but it's like, really? But there were also a couple of booths that are indicative of they didn't sell all of the space.
I thought you were going to talk about the booth opposite Wild Bill's.
Well, there was the one a little ways away of the bathroom remodeling, and then there's the one opposite it, which is the win a free trip to San Diego Comic-Con, implying that this show is somehow connected to that show. Not stating that, and again, that's just one of their... I wasn't even sure what that booth was for.
And that's the problem.
Yes.
And that is not on the convention, that's the booth. But I couldn't tell, nothing about that booth said who it was or anything. And the way they had San Diego Comic-Con plastered up there is win a prize, airfare, hotel, limo to and from. It certainly gave the impression it's just another one of these Comic-Cons.
Either there is a connection or that booth was from San Diego, and neither is the case.
Yeah.
So, a little odd. But there are the couple of booths here that are just, there was a booth that was otherwise going to be vacant.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, we did see one that was vacant. So I think it's getting harder for some of these shows to fill out the booths with the sorts of vendors we want to be there, because it's not always worth their time. So good show, fun, certainly looking forward to if they do it again next year.
Yeah, I agree.
So anything else? We good?
I think we're good.
Cool.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.